Yeah.
You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gal for All Seasons podcast on the NDB Media Sports channel here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Taryn the Coop Cooper, also known as the Gal for All Seasons. What's going on? We got a jam-packed show tonight. I'll be joined by several people, one of which is in the green room right now, my friend Rob Z from the Cult of Myth Personalities podcast and the KinersCorner.com writers. That sounds familiar to me. And also we have the Womp There It Is Jake segment with the one and only Blondie's Jake Stevens. I'm also going to be joined by a Jets podcaster and writer by the name of Jason Halliburton. We actually made a connection online yesterday, and I said, you need to be on my show. We have a shitstorm of stuff to talk about in with my teams, specifically the New York Jets. Fireman Ed has stepped down from his fireman duties and chanting duties, and that's just – it just makes me laugh. Sometimes being a Jets fan is just totally pathetic, and it makes me want to cry. And, you know, we have some other football stuff, which I'll go into with Jake. And then I'm talking Mets with my friend Rob. You know, let me bring him in right now because he's been waiting patiently for me. Let's hear him out. Rob Z, you with me?
I'm with you. How are you, Coop?
All right. I am doing well. And, you know, I guess I missed a good show. For those who are new in the loop, Rob and I are also co-hosts of the Cult of Myth Personalities podcast. We're on Ivy League Production Network. We're not in competition at all, but, you know, that's a Mets-focused podcast. But, you know, there's a lot going on in Mets land. But something that I wanted to touch on with you, because you and I were kind of on the same page last week, something, you know, was brought up in Mesopotamia, as I like to call it, that fans, as we all know, I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that fans just aren't going to games. I mean, they're not. The product that they're putting out on the field and the money that you spend, and even just the money getting there, because if you think about somebody who needs to drive, they need to pay for parking, they need to pay gas, toll, the whole nine, it almost gets to be like, you know, why would I want to do that? I can watch them from the comfort of my own couch. And you know what? I totally don't blame them. But what I find funny is that, you know, months ago I was cluing people in, like, they're going to raise ticket prices next year because they kind of have to. They kind of have to fill in that blank. And you and I were on the same page with opening day. Why not charge an arm and a leg for a premium game? Why not? You know, fans aren't going to stop going to opening day. Mm-hmm. So I really just wanted to get your philosophy on that, because you and I were kind of like the dissenting voices that we, you know, I understand how it looks. You know, I don't have to like it, but I understood it. What did you think about that?
I thought when I first heard about that, yes, it's a steep price, but I feel that you've got to separate the fan from the business. First and foremost, no matter if it's the Mets or the Yankees or the Jets or Giants or whichever sport you're watching, it's a business first, and their job is to make money. Regardless of the Wilpon financial situation, the job is to make money first, championship second. Usually the two go hand in hand, but if you can't get number two, you better get number one. Now, there's only, as obviously the Mets are in a rebuilding phase, and you have to go and make what you can off what I call the premium dates. There are about 8 premium dates a year. For the Mets in particular. Opening day, the 3 games, now I believe it's going to be switched to 2 in a year from now, but 3 games against the Yankees, the last game of the season, and if you're lucky, if the Mets are home, you get Memorial Day, Labor Day, and 4th of July. And those aren't guaranteed every year. So it mm-hmm. could be any as little as 5 games a year, and it could be at most 8 games a year. And what you do, got to remember, is everybody keeps on yelling about, but the product on the field isn't worth $63. You're not paying for the product on the field when you're going to one of those games. You're paying to be able to say, I was there for opening day. You're paying to be able to go and take your ticket and put it and preserve it somewhere for a memento. You're there to see the pomp and circumstance that comes with an opening day. You're not there to take just because it's a nice day to go to a baseball game. If you want to do that, you could go in the middle of the week when they're facing the Pittsburgh Pirates and get it at a much cheaper price. You're paying for a premium day. Mm-hmm. And there's something else that people have been missing on. The Mets are being actually very smart about this. Do you know that if you go online right now that nobody else is offering single-game tickets right now? Mm-hmm. The earliest I found was the Boston Red Sox offering it on December 6th. That's the earliest I found single-game tickets. Every team is either not offering tickets yet or offering only season ticket plans or holiday gift plans. The Mets, by offering individual tickets so early, are setting the market for everybody else. Now the rest of the teams will be looking to see how much the Mets do, and I wouldn't be surprised if this causes a lot of other teams to also start the year with a high opening day turnout. And there's one other factor that a lot of people are missing, and it's a big elephant in the room and something that's going to cause a lot of changes in baseball and all other sports for a long time, and that is the StubHub factor.
Mm-hmm.
You got StubHub, you got eBay, you got all of these TickIQ, you have all of these ticket trading websites, and it's a gamble. But basically, these people are organized scalpers. They buy the tickets ahead of time, they hope that the team does better and they can make a killing on it, but if the teams do badly, they are the ones who have to take the hit. So the Mets are banking that because StubHub will know that opening day, people are going to go to opening day. You know, maybe it won't be John Smith who works at the factory who only makes the minimum wage. It may not be him. But there are people, this is New York City, there are people who can afford things.
Mm-hmm.
And they will go on StubHub and go and find that ticket on StubHub before they go on to Mets.com to find a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, that's something that is, yeah, it's the elephant in the room for sure. Continue.
Oh, sorry. But but just imagine it. Imagine if, let's say, the Mets don't sell out opening day. They are still going to sell all those tickets to StubHub. Maybe StubHub won't buy every ticket, but I am sure they're going to buy a sizable amount of opening day tickets. On the off chance that Dickey stays and he's getting a Cy Young Award that day, or something else happens. Or the Mets maybe make a big trade and they end up having a much larger expectations. And worst comes to worst, if they don't sell out opening day, they have sold their tickets to StubHub, and then they could go and do a positive PR move. Yes, I know that sounds strange coming from Metsland, but they could do a positive PR move by reducing ticket prices.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, they did have a lower price. This is not about selling opening day. It was selling the group plans. A lot of teams right now are only selling season tickets or group plans. And those group plans, when you take a look at the prices, are actually quite fair and reasonable and good. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got a lot of people who aren't as gung-ho on every little detail that the Mets do right or wrong. I'm sure they got a lot of people buying season ticket plans just to be able to go to those premium dates that they have available.
Right. And, you know, you touched on so many topics, you know, one of which is a season ticket holder, and I've been very vocal that I am one. I don't plan on not being a season ticket holder, you know, anytime soon. Even though, you know, the team is bad, I joke about it. I joke about spending my money. The reality is I'm not going to stop being a fan. I'm not going to stop going to games. If I stop going to games, it's just going to hurt me because I'm going to miss it too much. And that's just a personal thing, you know, that I have to go through. You know, I had Mark Healy on the show last day. I'm like, you know what, you're absolutely justified in calling me a schmuck. Like, I totally agree with you. I'm an idiot. But, you know, that's the point. But, you know, my philosophy is, you know, I'm kind of like, you know what, charge a boatload of money for opening day. I really don't care, you know, because for me, I end up paying, you know, for tickets on average. So premium games, less than premium games, you know, it all averages out to me. Like, that doesn't concern me. What concerns me are those Pittsburgh Pirates games, Colorado Rockies games that nobody wants to go to. And I end up talking them on StubHub, selling them for a fraction of the value just to get Heinies in the seats. You know, and that profit, you know, where's that going? That's going to the Wolpons. That's going into Citi Field, which, you know, ultimately I'm hoping to get a return on my investment by, you know, either celebrating a championship, going to playoff games, or being able to sell my All-Star game tickets, which is another, you know, one of those proverbial elephants in the room that nobody is really addressing, is that that's going to bring, you know, even though they, you know, technically the profit, and I'm not really sure how the economics work of that, but I know that a lot of the deal is actually for MLB. You know, it just, you know, probably will bring people to Citi Field that normally would not be at Citi Field at that time of the year. So there's that. The StubHub factor, though, to me is something that I noticed a bit ago, and I'd like to get your feedback, too. You know, we're both from New York. We're both Mets fans. You know, obviously, we're inundated. Yankees, Mets, Yankees, blah, 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 and everything is at a premium. And like you said, in New York, people have money to spend. You know, it doesn't really matter, you know, you're hit by the economy, whatever. Chances are you're going to find some schmo who's going to be like, I'll spend money on that. That's cool. But, you know, here's the kicker is that, you know, I do a lot of traveling. And, you know, for baseball games, I should say. And, you know, one of the places that I'll go to is Baltimore. And I have never had a problem walking up the day of a game, getting really good seats for, you know, like $40, you know. And a $40 seat at Citi Field, you know, is either A, non-existent, or B, is something that's like, you know, way in the promenade deck. You know, it's not the best seat in the house. You know, if I walk up. So you're absolutely right. You know, fans aren't going to Mets.com. Fans aren't going to the ticket office that day to, you know, walk up sale. You know, walk up sales is almost a thing of the past. The new walk up sale is StubHub. You know, oh, what's available? What's cheap? Who's marking down their tickets? You know, that's something that, you know, we really need to consider for this next generation. But, you know, so that's one thing, you know, and the secondary market also works well there. But when I was in L.A., okay, and L.A. is not a small market, and, you know, we hear a lot about Dodger fans and how lax they are. You know, they're very blasé about the team. They show up in the third inning, they leave in the seventh inning. It's all about the traffic and being seen and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, tickets have not been doing well there either. You know, they've got a barn to fill up, 55,000 seats. I mean, at the minimum, it's probably more for all I know. I got loge seats, you know, basically, you know, great field lines, whatever, for $12 3 years ago. And let me tell you, that was a good team to see. And that game, you know, wasn't, I don't want to say it was empty. I mean, it wasn't sold out. There were people there. It was a Saturday night. But if that's happening in L.A., why are fans so surprised that, you know, people are marking down their tickets in New York? You understand what I mean? Because, you know, we shouldn't be so shocked, and it's not necessarily a Mets thing / Wilpons are broke and the team sucks and no one wants to go. The Dodgers had a very good team, and they have a draw to people who want to see West Coast baseball, people like me who want to see those games. And $12 for a premium ticket, to me, on StubHub in the secondary market, kind of raises a red flag for the economic market of those tickets.
Oh, definitely. And keep in mind that, you know, another great example is look at the Knicks. Remember in the 90s when they, you know, were harping on the fact that they went through 12 years or so of every game being a sellout? The Knicks have not been, you know, championship caliber the last few years, but they've gotten back to respectability, I would say, over the last 2-3 years. And they haven't been selling out either. Think about that. New York, basketball mecca. This is a basketball, you know, this is a big basketball town. And they haven't been selling out. And the Yankees, who, you know, are the biggest brand, maybe with the exception of Manchester United, didn't sell out fully playoff games last year.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a shift to go and get especially with HD and 3D TV and the premium sports networks. The Dodgers just made a mint off of their TV deal. it's so much comfortable and easier and cheaper to go and just watch the game at home, especially when you're lucky enough as Mets fans are to have Gary Keith and Ron calling the game, that it's not that big of a deal to go out to a game anymore. It's not that much quote-unquote fun. So the Mets have to go and maximize those premier dates whenever they can. And the other thing to keep in mind, let me go through this scenario with you. You were mentioning about the being a season ticket holder and how when you got that bad season with the Mets and the $12 game with the Pirates and you're trying to sell the tickets and you're not able to go and get back on your investment. I've been on the other side of the coin. The best seat I ever had was right next to first base on the front row, and I got them for $20 because I went to a weekday afternoon game on a season the Mets stunk. But think about this. Have you ever imagined if the Mets did surprisingly well next year and they end up being a 100-win team? How would people react if the Wilpons announced that because the product on the field improved dramatically, that in, let's say, July or August, they are going to increase ticket prices for the rest of the season? Nobody ever mentions that. That is also part of the deal. It is a lottery. It is a chance. Season tickets, buying opening day tickets, buying these ticket packages, there's a chance that you're going to see a win. There's a chance you're going to see a loss. There's a chance that you're going to see a really good team, and there's a chance you're going to see a really bad team. The prices that they give out are prices based on the best guess that they can give you and based on so many other factors. So, yes, there is a possibility that you're going to go and be cheated, quote-unquote, out of your money if the team does badly. However, Coop, if you go and have tickets at a 70-win value and the Mets turn out to be a 100-win value and you do not want to go to every single one of those games, especially in August and September, you can make a mint.
That's the other side of the coin right there. You know, and that's something that I've kind of been, you know, as a, you know, looking at it from an economic and business standpoint of having season tickets, you know, looking at that aspect as well. Because, you know, the last few years, as you know, the Mets haven't been good. And in late August and September, especially when the kids start going back to school and parents, you know, aren't as eager to go to the ballpark anymore or willing to deal with traffic or willing to stay out late. No, MG, what if this is an extra inning game and I'm going to get out so late and blah, blah, blah. You know, there are a lot of factors that go into that. But, you know, I would get really upset, like, in September when I'd see, like, buy two tickets, get five free. Like, you know, that I'd just be like, you know, am I chopped liver here? That, you know, but it could go either way, that if there is a hot game that, you know, had maybe pennant implications, you know, there's nothing stopping me from marking my tickets up if I can't make a game. And, you know, they're also, like you said, I feel like, you know, we were the dissenting opinions, and we saw it from an economic standpoint that the Mets are kind of just trying something new, and people did cry about it. People were upset about it, and, you know, maybe they'll just file it under, you know, their cap and be like, all right, maybe that was a massive fail, but whatever. You know, if it did work, if it was crazy enough to work, that could set the trend for other, you know, other baseball teams, especially, you know, one like the Dodgers, one in larger markets that, you know, have $10 tickets on StubHub on the field. So that's something else to consider in those marketplaces too. Do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, I have a few more minutes.
Okay, cool. So we've got David Wright. You know, I just want to get your thoughts on that, because I know that, you know, I missed our show on Tuesday night. Unfortunately, my phone died when I was out. That was fun. But I wanted to get, you know, abridged version of what you thought of this contract.
Well, do you want my abridged thoughts on the contract or the entire back and forth craziness of Tuesday?
Well, you know what? I had my other guest in the queue, so give me about a 30-second roundup of what you think about David Wright, and I'll get your notes on Twitter on the back and forth.
I think that if the contract that the Mets are offering of 7 years, $140 million is true, assuming that's either whether it's with the option or without the option, if that's the case, then they did all they could. And if Wright doesn't want to stay, I understand him. And if the Mets can't retain him, I understand him. I understand their point of view. In my opinion, there is no bad sides here. I'd love for him to come back, but if he can't accept this deal, I think the Mets got to look to trade him. So
it's just
wait and see at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know what? I totally agree. And I know. Thank you for the retweet on my Craner's Corner piece earlier, about the sentimental value of David Wright, because you know that I'm incredibly hard on him, but, it's getting to the point where I'm like, oh, holy shit, if he's gone, I'm going to be really upset. Rob, tell us where we can find you.
You could find me at Rob_Zlotto, Zlotto, on Twitter. And also, just to let people know, Coop also wrote a really good Jets piece the other day on Gal for All Seasons, and that is a must read. Definitely a must read.
Aw, thank you. Thank you so much, Rob. I really appreciate that. And that's something that I hope to talk about with my next guest. And I think he's dropped off the queue right now. I think that's about it. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm glad that, I actually am able to have a one-on-one with you instead of, the usual roundtable that we have with the craziness with our podcast every week where, we only have about, a few minutes each to kind of, bitch about the Mets and whatnot. So, you have a welcome on the show anytime. Join us in the chat room. And thanks.
Thanks for having me. And if you ever want me to talk Jets or Knicks, I'm your man.
Oh, cool. You know what? I might take you up on the Knicks offer because I don't follow local basketball. My team is the Utah Jazz. So, okay. Very good. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye. All right. That was Rob Z from KinersCorner.com. I am Taryn the Coop Cooper from Gal for All Seasons here on the NZB Media Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio. As Rob had plugged, I was, I've been writing a lot about the Jets lately. And it's two-pronged. One is that there's a lot of drama in Jetopia right now. Why did I become a Jets fan? I didn't have to be a Jets fan, but I became one. And I really don't like myself. I blame my father for it, but it's mostly on me. What can I tell you? In any case, I've been writing a lot about the Jets, and I said, that there was, it's two-pronged because I don't have hockey right now, and that's another issue that I have. And, that's really sad for me as well, that I don't really have that outlet. And, in any case, my guest was having some issues dialing in. I met somebody. I'll give you the backstory. I was looking for Fireman Ed. And if you're anybody who's anybody that follows football, watches the weekly games, you know that the most visible Jets fan was Fireman Ed Anzalone. And I believe that my guest is in the queue right now. I was looking for a way to get in touch with Fireman Ed. He had a Twitter account. He had a lot of followers. The long and short of it was Jets fans are turning against one another. And honestly, I'm used to it. I've seen it with Mets fans. It's not pretty. It happens when, any, kind of grassroots effort, there's going to be a lunatic fringe. And Fireman Ed said, you know what, I don't need this anymore. And I felt bad about it because I do get the warm fuzzies on Sundays. I love going to games. I haven't been to a game this year. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to one. But in any case, I was looking for him, and I ran across another Jets social media online goon personality. Please help me welcome. Let me give you his intro. I've got Jason Halliburton. He's the host of the Jets Report on WTSM-DB, the sportsmenuradio.com. He is a diehard and long-suffering Jets fan, originally from Brooklyn. Hey, Jason, you with me?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, thank you. I'm so sorry that we were having issues connecting you tonight.
No, that's fine. I have two Rugrats that are running me rampant, so I kind of unexpected. Thought the wife was going to be here about, 6:30, 6:45. She's not here, so I'm multitasking right now, but that's fine. I didn't want to leave you out. How are you?
Oh, no, you know what? It's fine. You know, I always, kind of overbook my guests, and, I always kind of prepare, other things, and I had luckily my Mets fan / podcaster. We have another podcast that we're co-hosts of. He was able to.
Did you say
to
Mets
in.
Fan? I'm sorry, I'm a Yankees fan, but it's all good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was just telling the story about how I came across your work and I came across you was because I had come across an article on CBS Sports by Jeff Capellini, and it was about how, I mean, we all know, I was just saying, Fireman Ed is, the Jet fan. He's one of us. And, some fans love him, some fans hate him. I happen to be the one that loved him. And, we were talking about him, and I said, you need to come on my show. So thank you. But, it's in Jetopia, there's always drama. Can you give me, kind of a quick background? You say you're a long-suffering Jets fan. You're originally from Brooklyn. Can you give us just a brief overview of your fandom?
Well, it's like a lot of Jets fans that have cursed their parents for making them Jets fans instead of Giants fans. Why did you put me on the green side instead of the blue side? I was born in Brooklyn, right there in Crown Heights. Maple Street, between Norton and Rogers. Anytime someone gives you a cross street, they're from there. But, grew up there, and I watched the Jets lose and come so close to having that miracle season. And Testaverde ruptures his Achilles when Testaverde was there, and then we thought we had our savior in Chad Pennington, and he happened to just have a bum shoulder just his entire career. I mean, one of the most accurate passers that the Jets ever had, but just couldn't get it done. And we went from the Bill Parcells and even further back before then, but just the Bill Parcells and the Bill Belichick thing. He resigned as a head coach after just one day, and the Herm Edwards. We've gone through the whole slew of head coaches and disappointments, and even the Rich Cotty era when we just were, I think, 4 wins and 28 losses. So, it's just one of those things where if you're not careful, you find yourself depressed, mm-hmm. that Monday morning when you wake up, you're more depressed, not so because the Jets lost, but because everyone at your job knew that the Jets were going to lose, and you were the only one who had faith as a fan. And when you're going to walk into that office, there's going to be something on your desk that says, just end the season. That's just one of those things.
Right.
We're back at that all over again this season.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. Like, my father, I yelled at my father after the 2008 Super Bowl. It was bad enough that the hated Patriots were in it. And, I'm not one of those Jets fan that hates the Giants. I just don't root for them. I don't really care about them. And I said to my dad, it's bad enough that you torture me being a Mets and Rangers fan, but why a Jets fan? Like, I could have been a Giants fan when I was a kid, and I don't think he would have cared all that much. But honestly, I did it for him, and it ain't easy being green. We know that it's not easy being Jets green, that's for sure. But we, just ask Mark Sanchez and Fireman Ed, which is how you and I got connected. And, I was just I just wanted Fireman Ed to know that people support him, and I'm one of those, and I feel really bad. That article by the Green Lantern said that this is endemic of the bigger problems in Jetsland. Like you said, 2 seasons ago we were euphoric. We had this young stud quote unquote quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, you know, Rex Ryan, love him or hate him, he always had something great to say, and the buck stopped with him. And, you know, 2 years in a row going to the AFC Championship game and falling just short, and like you said, you know, just hope upon hope. But, you know, Fireman Ed steps down and he was ostracized. He's the most vocal, you know, you can say number one fan, for lack of a better term. It's systemic to the bigger problem in Jets land. There's infighting, poor execution and management, you name it, and this team and the fan base has it. So, you know, what was your take on Fireman Ed Gay? Because I haven't gotten your personal view.
Well, I will say this. I know Fireman Ed personally. He came on the Jets Report a year ago, and you know, he and I, we keep in contact. Outside of me knowing him as a person, I will say, even if you didn't know him as a fan, you have to respect the fact that that guy bleeds green. Whether or not the fact of the matter is he might have been rooting for another team prior, the fact is, since the 60s, this man has bled green and white, just like everyone else. My issue is, and you know, I'm a former police officer, and I also work for the federal government in law enforcement, so I can say it from a safety standpoint. You do not want anyone confronting you in any confrontational manner, whether it's verbal or physical, just because you support a particular player on that team. Now, a lot of people have thought that the Jets organization pays for his season tickets. He gets some sort of perks from the organization. Straight out of Fireman Ed's mouth, he does not. In his defense, he does not. He pays for his season tickets and his PSLs just like everyone else. One thing that he chose to do in an interview that we had with him in August, he chose to support Sanchez. He said, if we're going to go to the Super Bowl, if we're going to have success, he believes Sanchez is the one to take us there. So everyone knows he normally wears his regular number jersey, but this year he decided to wear the number 6 jersey in support of Sanchez. That's where he was getting a lot of slack and heckling from the fans. I do not believe that people have a right to confront anyone. Imagine you're going to the grocery store, and just because you support a particular team, you have fans that are irate, you know, approaching you in your personal space, in your personal time. He even said, you know, while he was going to the restroom at the stadium, fans were heckling him. Fans were approaching him. That is very serious. Let us not forget that a fan was assaulted last season in the parking lot where he needed several surgeries. You know, it can get that serious. I do not believe that we as fans should take it that serious to that level where we're actually confronting people and initiating some sort of harm.
Yeah, I you know what, I agree. And, you know, I've been on both sides of the coin where I've been a visiting fan. You know, when I followed the Mets to the West Coast, and one of my favorite stories to tell is when I went to AT&T Park in 2010 that I actually felt threatened as a fan. But to be ostracized by your own fan base, you know, and let's be fair. I mean, he's very visible. There's probably an amount of jealousy that's there, probably like, oh, I'm not his BFF, so I'm just going to heckle him or whatever. And, you know, it's someone like Dancing Larry who goes to Ranger games. He riles up the troops and whatnot in the 400 section. He gets a lot of heat, too. But you know what? The Rangers are a solid team, and the Jets are kind of falling apart at the seams. And, you know, I think the Green Lantern was absolutely right that this is just systemic of what's going on in Jetopia, as far as I'm concerned. But I, you know, I wanted to thank you for sharing that. I had my next guest in the queue. You know, he's also going to talk Jets. Do you want to hang on while I bring him in?
Yeah, I can hang on for a few more minutes.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are about to get to the Whoop There It Is segment with the one and only Blondie's Jake Stevens. I'm going to cue him in right now. Whoop, there it is, Jake. What's going on, man?
Just listening to you guys.
Well, I wanted you two to kind of have like a synergy, because you know, you and I are ultimately going to talk about Jets. And, you know, by the way, I have Jason Halliburton on the line. Jason, this is my we have the weekly There It Is Jake segment. Well, there it is. And, you know, ultimately, Jake and I are, you know, we're both Jets fans. So, you know, we have that unique synergy. You know, what are your thoughts on what we're talking about here?
Well, I'll say this, Coop. I used to go to games with a buddy of mine who despised – Fireman Ed, who felt like he was the type of guy who showed up and was loud and was very visible when the team would win, and when the team was struggling, suddenly he was nowhere to be found. I don't know where I fall on that. I will say this. I certainly don't think anybody should, you know, you shouldn't feel threatened, and it shouldn't be a dangerous situation in a stadium. I think this country, we have lost our minds when it comes to that stuff. People think if you buy a ticket, you can do anything you want to. However, I will say this, if you're going to put yourself up as a public spectacle by standing on somebody else's shoulders, by waving your hat, by getting everybody to cheer, then you shouldn't be surprised by people who are heckling you. Again, heckle, I consider that acceptable. More than that, threatening, physically harming, definitely not. I mean, it's not even up for debate. And you're talking about an incident that happened in the Jets parking lot, and out here in L.A., the incident with a San Francisco Giants fan who was in a coma for quite some time because some Dodgers fans, and I hesitate to call them that, but they attacked him in the parking lot after the game. So it really has become uncomfortable in a lot of places. Having said that, if you put yourself in the public eye, I think you have to be able to accept criticism in the public eye. I just don't think it can go any further than that. Does it matter to me that Fireman Ed is gone? No, don't know him personally. Didn't necessarily care for him, but certainly didn't hate his guts either.
Cool. And, you know, I you know, feel for, you know, the fan, Brian Stowe, as you said. You know, but like I said, I've been on the other side of the coin. When I was in San Francisco, people just yelling in my face. You were actually at that game with me, Jake.
I think I was yelling in your face that day.
Yeah, you probably were, you know, because we went to see Mike Telfrey. But you know, Jason, do you have any last thoughts on tying up the Jets? Because, I mean, Thursday was just like a massacre. It was really painful to watch.
Did that game happen yet? I'm still waiting for the Thanksgiving Day game against the Patriots. That hasn't happened, right? So now reality
was,
is a beautiful thing.
Go ahead.
No, I'll say this, and then I'll leave it up to wherever you take it with this. But really, I think we need to go into the Jets locker room, into the Jets front organization with a huge broom and just do a huge sweep. Me personally, I was a Rex Ryan fan because he did bring a different energy to the Jets that they really needed, you know, especially with the slogan, play like a Jet. Now, it's good to play like a Jet, but everyone must be accountable, and there's no accountability when it comes to Rex Ryan. Once again, if you're a parent, if you're a father or mother, you know you can only be so much of a friend to your children, but you still need to be a parent. Now, we're talking about 21, 22, you know, 3, 24-year-old millionaires that don't need another friend. They need a head coach. When they go around calling their head coach by their first name and they, you know, spew whatever they want to spew to the media, they do whatever they want to do, that, of course, translates to the field, and thus you see a whooping like a 49-19 because they were not prepared. That falls on the head coach, a lack of preparation because you're too busy running your mouth. Even look at Bart Scott. He's always running his mouth. He always has something to say, but he's the one that got burnt for that touchdown in that Patriots game. You should be the last one to say anything. You should actually be apologizing to your fans. You should be, you know, responding. You know, so with that being said, I think Rex Ryan needs to go. He's, at best, a great defensive coordinator, not a good head coach. That's why the Ravens passed over him, because they knew they needed leadership in the locker room, which Rex Ryan doesn't have. I'm sorry. Tannenbaum, I call him Tannenbaum, he needs to go too. He's an accountant at best, not a general manager. Sit down, crunch some numbers, give that GM position to someone that really deserves it. Bring in someone, hopefully, like Bill Cowher, who will have these guys responsible, who will bring in his own GM and restore some respectability to that NFL locker room.
And on that note, Jason, where can we find you?
Well, you can check me out on the Jets Report every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern on the sportsmenuradio.com. We stream live on WTSM Digital Broadcast, Marietta, Atlanta. Of course, here in Atlanta, I'm a transplant. You can go there and listen to us on there and on iTunes. Sports Menu Radio, The Jets Report.
All right. Fantastic. And I hope to have you on the show when we have more time to talk about the Jets, for lack of a better term, because it's more criticism.
Yeah, than anything. Well, thanks, Ms. Cooper. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Take care. And that was Jason Halliburton. Just give me 1 second here, Jake. This Gal for All Seasons podcast. I'm the Coop, NDB Media Sports Blog Talk Radio. There it is, Jake. Okay, we've got a few more minutes.
People
did
take
you
up my time.
Did you have a rebuttal? Well, yeah, everything is a little bit crazy because he had a dial in late. It was it was just one of those things.
No worries.
Yep. But
I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with what he said about the need to clean house, especially with Tannenbaum, and especially getting rid of Tony Sperano, who rivals the worst offensive coordinators in the country for any sport. And I was also a Rex Ryan fan, and I'm hedging because I agree he's done the same thing. He's let them become the head coaches. The inmates are running the asylum, and you can't do that. And, yes,
right.
There needs to be more talent, but there needs to be more control. And there needs to be a better system in place because their offense is a mess, and there needs to be somebody who's doing a better job of putting talent into that system. But having said all that, having said the fact that Tannenbaum has not done a good job with talent, having said that Rex Ryan isn't necessarily in control of everything out there, having said that they don't have all the pieces that they need, this Jets team should still be better. And that, again, comes back to Ryan. And it comes back to Sperano, and it comes back to that locker room where they think they are untouchable because their coach always backs them. And so if Rex doesn't change his tune, which you thought after last year when he clearly had completely lost control, but then again, what did management do? Management immediately said that we're bringing back Santonio Holmes. Management sent the message that the inmates will run the asylum. So Rex's hands were kind of tied in some respects. But if he's going to be the man, then he's got to step up and say, my hands aren't tied, you can't bring this guy back, and if you do, I'm going to tell him what's what, and if he goes astray, then we're going to cut his butt, because that's how it works. And that's why I'm just so fed up with that team, because there is no accountability. It's like the rest of the country, frankly. There's no accountability for anything. People just do whatever they want, and then it's all a mess, and then everybody points fingers at everybody else, and it's a disaster, Coop. They're a disaster coming off two straight AFC championship games. It looked like the team actually was, I should have known better.
Yeah, something right. Yeah.
Should have known better. We're Jets fans, and Mets fans, we are like Charlie Brown. We always think we're going to kick the football, and Lucy always pulls it away from us every single time. And that's what Tannenbaum and Rex of Sperano have done at this point. And they need to get rid of a lot of it. And as I keep saying, they need to get rid of Sanchez. It's got to start with him, too. He's not good enough to be an NFL quarterback. You can have him hang out at your home and watch games with you. You can stare at his butt whenever you want. You can do all that, Coop. But he's not helping the Jets win games. He's just not.
You can stare at his butt or have him run into a,
Yes,
a
or have him run
butt.
Into his...
run into
God,
his
those,
teammate's ass.
Those were the two back-to-back worst plays in Jets history. And we've seen a lot of bad plays in Jets history. But those two were the worst. The butt sack fumble and return for a touchdown, followed by the kickoff, oops, squirt, caught, touchdown play. I mean, and you know what? If you get butt sacked in the NFL by your own player, you just aren't good enough to play in the NFL.
Well, we missed the perfect opportunity to call it the Dirty Sanchez. That was right there.
Oh, boy. Always
right,
taking the low road there, Coop.
Oh, come on. Look who you're talking to. How long have you known me? All right. Let's switch gears here. Your Cheers and Booze column, something that I wanted to talk to you was the asinine call, the negating of the flag and that questionable... Yeah, the questionable touchdown in Detroit. So please, enlighten us. Tell us your thought, because I was right there with you. I was infuriated by that.
Okay, so by now we all know that Jim Schwartz threw the challenge flag when they were already going to review the touchdown by Justin Forsett, which clearly was not a touchdown because he was down at around his own 26-yard line. But the officials missed it on the field and let him go all the way down the field. And your natural tendency as a coach is to throw a challenge flag when you know a play is called wrong. But the rule in the NFL is all scoring plays get reviewed and all turnovers get reviewed, so you don't have to throw your challenge flag. The rule is in place, apparently, to stop coaches from delaying the game anymore, though I don't understand how they could be delaying the game anymore if they throw a challenge flag when the play is being reviewed. I'm not sure what extra time is being taken up. But if they wanted to penalize a coach 15 yards for unnecessary conduct or unsportsmanlike conduct for throwing the flag when they shouldn't throw the flag, fine. To stop the review and say, therefore, a wrong play goes in the books as a touchdown is incomprehensible. That, I can't believe they haven't already changed the rule before this week's games. I kept waiting for an announcement from the league because that is by far – I've seen so many dumb rules in the books. I have seen so many times where a play happens and I'm going, well, why is that even a rule? But this one tops them all. They negated a review – of a play that clearly was called wrong by the officials. On what planet does that make sense? I don't know.
Planet, I don't know. Well, when we were growing up, Pluto was a planet, so maybe that's why they got rid of it, because, you know, it makes sense there. So so there's that. You know, what else? We have a few more minutes here. You know, was there anything else pressing about, you know, about the games last weekend? You know, we're in denial that the Jets actually played, that the Jets Patriots. I was looking forward to, I actually was looking forward to it, and then I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? So I won't bring that up. But you know, was there anything else pressing?
Well, I don't know if you'd call it pressing, but there were some very interesting plays and some neat moments in the NFL. Ray Rice, the good Ray, and his 4th-and-29 conversion when he took a dump-off pass and outraced about 8 Chargers across the field was a spectacular play and probably what will allow the Baltimore Ravens to win their division and probably be either the number 1 or number 2 seed in the AFC when the season is over. I found that to be amazing, and it couldn't have happened to any better of a coach than to Norv Turner, who was already with both feet and both arms out the door. The only thing that hadn't gone out the door yet was his posterior, his derriere, his butt, whatever you want to call it. If there was any question, he will certainly be gone after that one. But there were some entertaining games that were played. Not much of movement, and here's something that I found. With all the unpredictability and with the whole any given Sunday in the NFL, there's approximately one division in pro football that's still up for grabs. Everything else is basically locked up. The Patriots will win the AFC East. The Ravens will win the AFC North. The Texans will win the AFC South. The Broncos will win the AFC West. The Giants will win the NFC East. We don't know who's going to win the NFC North because there's still the Bears and the Packers and the Vikings battling it out. The NFC South is going to the Falcons unless they have a complete El Foldo starting tonight against New Orleans. And the NFC West is going to the San Francisco 49ers. There are essentially six spots left in the playoffs. There are 3 spots left in the playoffs. No? I'm going to do this one more time. There are 5 spots left in the playoffs. The NFC North division winner, and then the 2 wild cards in each league. And in the AFC, it's a battle of attrition. There's a whole bunch of bad teams, but it looks like the Colts, who I've touted for most of the year, looks like they may make it. I would love to see Robert Griffin III and the Redskins, who tore up that terrible Cowboys D, so it wasn't really that big a deal. But they're an exciting team. They're fun to watch. Robert Griffin is just fantastic to watch. I would love to see those couple of rookie quarterbacks get in there. But it's the last 3-4 weeks here, they're not going to be nearly as exciting as they could be because there's not going to be that many teams, and the ones who are fighting are going to be the wild card fodder teams that get destroyed in the first round by the teams who've had a chance to rest and prepare for them. So that I found that very interesting. But the game tonight is huge. There's a couple of games that are intriguing this weekend, including Tampa Bay at Denver. Tampa Bay, grasped defeat from the jaws of victory against the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, so they're now in big trouble when it looked like they might close the gap. You also have the Minnesota Vikings trying to hang on after that great start. If they can beat the Green Bay Packers, that could be something. And then you have the Giants at Washington on Monday night, and a late afternoon game you have the Steelers, whether Ben Roethlisberger plays or not, against Baltimore. If he doesn't play, the Steelers have zero chance of winning. If he does play, the Steelers have about 5% chance of winning because that team is battered and bruised, and the Ravens know that it's time to finish that team off for good. But
I just wanted to tie it up with, you know, it's funny when you mentioned North Turner because I always know when the Chargers are playing because Twitter just blows up with what an idiot that man is. Yeah, I mean, maybe things could be worse for the Jets, so you could be in charge. I mean, I don't know.
Don't even say, Coop, if that happens, I'm going to find you. And I'm
you know
gonna,
what, I was joking with someone before and said, I said, you know, the night that I go, when I take this train trip that I'm planning on taking, I said, there's going to be some storm and a tree is going to fall on the track and it's going to ruin my night. She's like, you shouldn't have said that because it's going to happen. So,
yeah, you never want to risk those things.
I'll bite my tongue. If that happens, though, we're going to have a funeral for the Jets. It's just not going to happen for us, like, ever in our lifetime, Jake. All right.
Turner is Jets coach. Oh, no. Oh, I got a migraine just from that statement, Coop.
All right. Where can we find you, brother?
You can find me, especially every Monday, at thereitisjake.com for my weekly cheers and booze. And you can also check out all the cool stuff at 4emediagroup.com, the number 4, the letter E, mediagroup.com. And taking a trip next week to Nashville for the baseball winter meetings. So that'll be a whole lot of fun. Who knows what I might hear down there that I can pass along to, especially to Mets fans who are, I know everybody's waiting to see, will Wright and Dickey be signed or will they be shipped out? It's still to be determined.
It is still to be determined. So, yeah, that's fun. That's actually news to me. So, yeah, have fun in Nashville. And there it is, Jake. All right, man. Thanks for being on. You're awesome.
Thanks for having
usual.
Me, Coop. Love
All right.
it. Love it.
Talk to you soon. And there it was, Jake. And I'm the Coop, and I'm signing off for the night. I'm the Gal for All Seasons. You can find me at galforallseasons.com. You can find me on Twitter at Coops22, COOPZ22, and you can probably find me in a multitude of areas. You just need to, you know, keep your eyes open. This is Coop signing off on NZB Media Sports here on Blog Talk Radio. Talk to you next week.